pretty amazing stuff. I was looking at it a little bit this afternoon. It's a new role-playing video game that is leaving nothing to the imagination. Mass Effect is what it's called. It's made for Microsoft's Xbox system, and it features some, in some parts of this, you'll see full digital nudity. Imagine! And the ability for the players to engage in graphic sex, and the person who's playing the game gets to decide exactly what's going to happen between the two people, if you know what I mean. Now, the game is rated M for mature. However, critics say that Mass Effect is being marketed to kids and to teenagers. Microsoft responded to these claims and said that they were inaccurate. They released this statement that reads in part, "We actively support and abide by all video game rating systems and provide built-in industry-leading technology such as parental controls and a family timer that empowers parents and caregivers to monitor their children's experience with video games, notably with respect to content, online interactions, and..."
Okay.
So that's basically the lead. They're saying...
I think it moves up. Hopefully it'll be all right.
Okay, so this was the noted alien side boob controversy of 2008, in which Fox News basically had a completely baseless claim that in this game you can go around and have sex, and there's full digital nudity, and you can decide all of it, and it's not at all true. Am I on here?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So it's not true in any degree, and you know, they later had to apologize, and the whole internet got angry at them. So thanks, internet.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Yay. Mouse.
Mouse out of the way.
Okay. This is. But it is true that you can form romances with these sort of strange-looking space aliens, and ultimately, you know, as the game nears its conclusion, you meet up with them and have a sort of a love scene that consummates the relationship. And I think that's kind of cool and interesting. So I'm gonna. Start through, there's just a bit of, start with, you know, basically, one of the nice things about this conference is that it brings together about a jillion different groups of people, from technologists to social theorists to sex fiends or geeks or any combination of the above. Who here plays video games at all? Good. Okay, who here has played any of the games produced by BioWare? That can include Knights of the Old Republic, Dragon Age, or Mass Effect, okay, cool. Good. So, but I think part of the reason that they sort of blew up on this is that they there's this weird thing about a game, and that the idea that games can somehow rewire your brain, and you watch out, or else you'll get sucked in and end up at some sort of sex conference in San Francisco. Oh.
What happened to you?
Okay,
so
I'm going to talk about just sort of some quick steps for game criticism, the issue of romance in games, talking more about Mass Effect and BioWare, some weird issues of gender and heteronormativity, and then the fun aspect of interspecies romance. Okay, so, you know, games, everybody says, yes, they're interactive. Plenty of things are interactive. You know, a light switch is interactive. A pop-up book is interactive, right? You open it up, and the state responds to what you're doing, right? You pull the little tab, and the thing goes. But the issue is, your actions and the reactions of the system have to be controlled in some sort of meaningful way. You need to have a goal. Now, it doesn't have to be in the game. It could, like, SimCity is a great example of a game that doesn't necessarily give you an explicit goal. You can say, all right, I'm going to build the biggest city possible, or I'm going to build a clean and green city, or I'm going to build a city with a really high crime rate. It's whatever goals you bring to it. And in fact, that's one of the really nice things about sort of games and game-like tendencies, is that anything with basically feedback you can control can be turned into a game, more or less. You know, this is the whole issue of like the personal metrics movement, where everybody's measuring their running times and stuff. That's the same sort of cognitive jolt as trying to beat your high score at Pac-Man or something. So you gotta have a goal. You're either bringing it or it's given to you. There's got to be a challenge, because if you have a goal and you get it really easily, it's not necessarily a fun game. For instance, let's play a game. Choose a color, red or blue.
Blue.
You win! You win! Choose a color, red or blue.
Red.
You win! You win! So that was an example of a game with no challenge. You know, you win no matter what you do, or the choice is or the choice can be extremely easy to figure out, oh, what is the optimal strategy? You know, in game theory, which is really this discipline of economics, they have this idea of, well, if something is an optimal strategy, you try to solve for that, but if you're actually designing a game, you sort of worry about optimal strategies because it sort of breaks it and everybody does that. So it needs to have a challenge that's informed by interesting choices, right? Do you go left or right? You know, do you rescue or harvest? Do you build up your tech or invest in your war machine? Right? And they're often sort of rock, paper, scissors structures to help balance these sorts of things. And you need to have consequences that make sense. It's some sort of feedback to what you're doing. And when you start getting into things like, it doesn't make sense to say, you know, in a game you can do this. You know, this game you can kill prostitutes, because it doesn't provide any kind of context. It doesn't give the moral physics of the situation. It doesn't give the context in which it occurs. Why the player. You know, a player is allowed to do something, but there's also, you know, consequences of that, right? If you're, and so really, it's not as much the issue of, you know, being allowed to do something as what happens when you do it. So also beyond that, there's this whole idea of like story and game story. Like, you know, the story is often done in like cutscenes or opening things, and it says, you know, this is what's going on. And an important point, not all games have to have stories. You know, chess is a great example. It would not be improved by adding a cutscene saying that it's a war between two brothers. It's a game, and the challenge is there, and the choices are there, and so that's what you have. When you have a story, you have to make sure that, I mean, there's basically the explicit story, and then there's the sort of personal story that emerges from the game mechanics and the dynamics of playing it. And that's sometimes harder to do, because it's a lot harder to foresee what someone is going to do and make sure that, you know, it's harder to signal that this is a consequence of this thing that you did. It's a lot easier to do it through dialogue or something like that. So, with this question of intent, right? Just because the game allows you to do something, does that mean that the designer is endorsing this? That's a question. This is one of the things that comes up when people try and talk about Grand Theft Auto in the mainstream media. And really what they should be criticizing is not that you can cause this awesome mayhem, but that your only sort of affordances of regular people on the street is like shooting them, or maybe picking them up in a cab if you do those sorts of missions. But you can't like walk up and ask them, you know, if what they think about Sigmund Freud, or you can't go and feed the pigeons in Grand Theft Auto, as far as I know. you know, so it's this is. There are kind of invisible walls that you have to create, because all designers have finite resources. You know, they can't create a perfectly simulated world, and in fact, that wouldn't be that fun anyway. So the issue really is, you know, you have to create some sort of invisible walls. You have to, you know, a game is not some sort of, you know, looking at it like a novel or from a film perspective, you can use some useful critical tools from that. But, you know, really, you also need to look at things like architecture and design. Like, if you look at a game as a space for action, it makes a lot more sense. And it's all about how you structure that space and, you know, allow someone to roam within it. Okay, so, like I said, games don't have to have stories. If they do have stories, it can be a problem. Because you have to balance a lot more things. With chess, you don't have to worry about whether, you know, this is out of character with the queen's actions, right? You can just do that. You don't need to think about believability in that regard. You know, you need to have fair but challenging gameplay. You need to have a narrative that responds to player choice. Now, some of them don't. They just sort of put you on rails. You know, I don't think there's a lot of player choice in House of the Dead. You can't choose to, you know, investigate what's going on with the zombies. You're really on rails, and you have to shoot all of them, or you're going to lose the game. You know, believability, or if it's not an explicit simulation, it needs to have some sort of internal consistency. There was a bit of a blow-up recently about the most recent Metroid game, because it seemed weirdly out of character for Samus to be doing all of these things, considering, you know, what had been established about her character before. Yeah, you can get into that later. Demands of art. This is one of those issues of, like, if you have something that's kind of challenging and knocks you on your ass, it's not necessarily, it makes it harder to create a fulfilling game experience, and it sort of is at odds with this kind of feeling of wish fulfillment or you know, power or escape that we often play games for. So people have said it's impossible to create a good tragedy within a game, and I don't think that's necessarily true, but it has to be done really cleverly so that once they're trapped within this web of consequences, they can't just reload an old save game and not do that. So it's an issue. Some people say, oh, what about porn games? And I think games are just mutually exclusive with pornography, because this is the idea of challenge, of creating interesting choices. And for the most part, pornography, if you consider it as you know, an aid to masturbation, it's just all about satisfying a need. And this is the thing, this is one of the problems with putting these game aspects into real life, is that I don't want to play a game when I turn on my water faucet. I just want water. It's, you know, lower down on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we just want things to work and to be satisfied for what we want. Now, there's plenty of game-like aspects to actual sex, or, you know, the whole, like, the pickup game. You know, that's those things are challenging. People can overlay their goals and have goals. But that's different from something that just helps get you off. And I think the issue is the more it goes towards helping, you know, that purpose, the more it's instrumentalized, the less it's an actual game.
Okay.
played some games. Why? Well, for one, it can be a good goal, right? You can rescue the princess, or it's just put there. Like, you are in love with this character, and you must rescue her. It can be a sort of wish fulfillment, right? You can play this game and think that you're such a smooth talker, even if you're living in your parents' basement. But I think one of the most interesting aspects is the way that a romance can sometimes add to deeper story involvement and emotional investment. The idea that you really care about these characters. You care so much about them that you want to, move in with them and, or at least you want your character to live a happy life with them. So there are some examples. It seems to come up a lot in stuff from Japan. Japan. The dating sims and the whole subculture of creating virtual girlfriend AIs and these games that sort of just take it for granted that you are in love with this such and such character. There's also The Sims, which is really nice in terms of its openness of who you can, fall in love with, but at the same time, in terms of these goals and consequences, I don't really like The Sims because it always seemed incredibly materialistic and putting me on the treadmill of like, well, if you buy more expensive furniture, you're going to be happier. Look, it has this number. It gives you +4 instead of +2. You're now more happier. Enjoy your Swedish couch. But I think in Fable and in the BioWare games, they've sort of hit the sweet spot of having these kind of relationships with non-player characters, these members of your parties, that develop into a rapport and that sort of lead to this involvement that near the climax you can consummate the relationship. They tend to follow a certain model. In a sense, the BioWare is owned by Electronic Arts. In the same way that you have to put out a new American football game every year, and it follows a certain model, and they can keep refining it and fine-tuning it. This is sort of similar. If you notice, there certain characters in Knights of the Old Republic seem kind of like certain characters from Mass Effect, right? There's the jaded old warrior guy. There's the, innocent young girl. There's, these sorts of things. But the thing about it is, if you want to have a romance, and the thing about BioWare, what they do really, really well, is that they have writers. And those writers tend to write well. They have more writers than most games companies, and they involve them further in the process. And I think it pays off, because a lot of these things are sort of believable and interesting and good. So, when I first started playing Mass Effect, who here is familiar with the game? Hands? Okay, I can give you some background. It's set in, the first game is set in the year 2183. Humanity has gone into space and encountered aliens, and there are some aliens which are not so friendly, and some aliens which are just weirdly passive-aggressive, and there are these issues of rising powers and xenophobia, and should we go it alone? Should we try to work with these other races? And you are Commander Shepard. You have a full, all that's really set is your last name and your status. You can determine your gender, what you look like, your sort of personal and service background. You can choose to be a sort of military brat who was, total Boy Scout and did some heroic thing to save people, or you can choose to be a someone who was drafted instead of being sent to jail, and you know, became noted for actions that bordered on war crimes. And one of the things in terms of all this, the talk about gender and one of the things that I really like about it is that in Mass Effect, if Commander Shepard is female, everyone, you know, respects her decisions. They never sort of question her, or you never have to, she never sort of, there's never like a worry about seeming tough enough, or you know, it's just a simple matter that's probably a result of them feeling like, well, you know, if it would be weird and extra work to code all these differences in, but it's actually a really empowering sort of thing. I think, especially with the really, really good voice acting that the female Commander Shepard has. All of these things are voice acted. It's done through a system where you sort of select a dialogue option, which you're not really sure, you know the gist of it, but it's actually spoken by the voice actor, and it can reveal details, and it's sort of a slight step back from selecting directly what you know they're going to say. So Commander Shepard is an Alliance Marine, but also gets appointed as the first Spectre, which is this kind of super agent acting for this interplanetary government that's above the law, and you know, the only way to deal with a Spectre is to send another Spectre. And so you have these weird dual alliances, you have this sort of military aspect, and I thought, in one sense, it was a great way of dealing with the sort of, you know, motivational issues of the character. Like, why am I going and doing this and helping all of these people? And it's like, oh, well, because those are my orders. But, you know, you have plenty of latitude to decide how you're going to complete those orders. You know, you can be a very by-the-book paragon, Commander Shepard, or you can play by your own rules and you know, throw people out of windows and you know, be the ultimate badass, which is the renegade path. And yeah, so it's an awesome game. I've sunk hours and hours and hours of my life into it. That said, I do have a couple of quibbles with it. So one of the issues is you're a commander, right? And I started getting into this, the military mindset. The first 5 minutes of the game really do a great job of putting you into the feel of the ship that's underway, and you're going to and you're going to a mission, and you're not really sure, and you're talking with your crewmates, and it started making me think, like, oh, you know, once you're the commander of a ship, you know, people, you're going to have eyes on you. You're going to have to make sure that your actions, are furthering the greater good, that these sort of unnamed people can trust you. And you know, they sort of take that as a given. And I felt a little deflated, sort of hoping that I would find more ways in which, you know, if you do something that's unprofessional, maybe it will come back and get you. This idea of these consequences, right? Because if you make decisions and there are no consequences, they're not really decisions, right? If you're rewarded just as much for doing the selfless, altruistic thing as you are for doing something selfish and to benefit yourself, then that's not a real choice, right? Because it's not selfless at all if you get rewarded exactly the same as if you did something selfish. You're not giving anything up. And so in the second game, they sort of try and bring this in that, you know, sometimes your squad mates will have arguments with each other sometimes, and you have to kind of side with one or the other, or resolve the situation in some way. And you know, there was this 1997 game, Star Trek Starfleet Academy, where you're a commander, and it would do these sorts of things, except after you resolved one of these, you know, full motion video cutscenes, it would, you know, you could go and look at evaluate your crew's performance, and there would be like measurable drops in performance if you, you know, like left someone in the dust or browbeat them in some way. And that's kind of implemented in Mass Effect 2, although, you know, there's this whole issue of like the unnamed crew members sort of, you know, I don't know, there's this whole issue of command when you have all these people underneath you, and I think the second game did a better job, but there's still these questions of command. For example, you know, two of the people you can pursue these romance options with are your direct subordinates. That's against the regs. That's blatantly against the rules. There's a name for it. Fraternization. It compromises the chain of command, results in the appearance of partiality, or otherwise undermines good order, discipline, authority, or morale. And that was the thing, is that you can never, like, you can do all of these things, but it never really seems to affect crew morale. Like, despite the fact you can be a massive hypocrite, you can, you know, you can say, you know, humanity is number one, and we're going it alone, and we can't trust anyone else. And then, meanwhile, you know, you go and are sleeping with aliens. It seems, you know, no one seems to really call you out on that. And in the first game, they, you know, you have these romance options, and during one mission, you have to make a choice. You know, you can go to rescue one of your teammates or the other. And one of them is your romantic interest, and the other is not. And a lot of people, judging from anecdotal evidence looking at the forums, went to save their romantic interest. And if you did that, I think that's just awful. You're a horrible commander. That's just me talking, but, you know, the idea of you know, you're letting your I don't know, personal wants get in the way of what's actually best, and you know, there's a reason that they have regulations for these sorts of things. Okay. There's another issue. Dragon Age, you can form same-sex romances. Mass Effect, you cannot. Except kind of. In the first game, you can form a relationship with this sort of alien woman who's, you know, I'll get into that later. But initially, they were going to have same-sex romances. And they recorded dialogue, they did these sorts of things, and then they cut it. And I don't think, you know, they sort of talk around it. They do offer some almost decent arguments about how, well, in this game you sort of cede some of your control over the character to support the narrative, but it's a cop out. They basically looked at this issue of they're making a game that has 120 people on the staff. They're making a game where they want to sell millions and millions and millions of copies. And, you know, they're worried because of things like Fox News, whether they're going to get pilloried for having, you know, gays in a military setting. It seems sort of weirdly disingenuous the way that they can be sort of standing up for these things in Dragon Age, but in Mass Effect, well, you know, it's different. But what's really different are their audiences, the people who buy the games. You know, the kind of guy who buys sci-fi action shooters may be a little bit homophobic. Or if not every guy, then at least a large chunk of your market. And if you're trying to make a lot of money so that you can make these wonderful games, those are decisions that sort of have to come up. It's this kind of paradox, right? You need all of this money to create these beautiful, artistically crafted games, but at the same time, the need for that money boxes you in. The invisible walls become an invisible straitjacket. And make it more difficult for some people who are playing to really experience, you know, really live out their Commander Shepard. For example, this is a character from Mass Effect 2. In her dialogue, she readily admits to having engaged in bisexual, pansexual, polyamorous relationships in the past, but the way it's set, only a male Commander Shepard can romance her. And I'm not really sure whether to feel like offended, or that, you know, maybe they're playing against stereotypes, or, you know, maybe this is the biggest affront to lesbians since I found out that the Beaver person was actually, in fact, a teenage boy. I think it's just weird the way it's like, you know, I don't know, that's a whole nother talk, unpacking this character. You know, if you're interested, you should, you know, pick up the game used and play through it, and also start messing with it. Because in the first game, there was certain amounts of programming implemented and certain amounts of dialogue recorded, they're there. You can get to that dialogue. You just have to enter in you start a game set as one gender with one appearance, and you enter in a console command to change your gender. And that's it. That's all it really takes. And there are save game editors where you can start messing around with certain flagged events and start engineering these structures of consequences to be more to your liking. I think that's really cool, this idea that people are hacking their genders to pursue same-sex romance, because that's exactly what the men and women of the military kind of have to do, or at least hack their sexualities or try to fly in under the radar, at least until December, I hope. Fingers crossed. And on YouTube, there are jillions of slash vids where, you know, they really like this character or that character, and you know, they manage to do these swaps and make these videos, and I think it's empowering, which is cool. You know, personally, I think one of the characters' romances kind of works really well in a same-sex context. Let me pull up that video.
Commander?
Don't you think we're a little past titled?
We're a little past a lot of things. What happens if this doesn't work out, Shepard? I mean, we need stolen prototype warship. They want to get technical to control and kidnap it. What a hell of an example of humanity's best and brightest, huh?
I'm just here to get the job done. Let someone else be on the poster.
Yeah. I doubt the Reapers listen to our propaganda anyway. It'll really hit the fan when we get to Ilos. If things don't go well, I want you to know. Wow. I've enjoyed serving under you.
Caden, I don't believe I've had the pleasure of you serving under me. Don't you think it's time to rectify that?
I wasn't planning to happen. We could get drowned out of the service for fragmentation. Of course, we'd probably get the firing squad for mutiny. Okay. I think about losing it, but I can't stay. The galaxy will just keep going. Everything will come around again. But you and I, we are important right now. This is what will never happen again. Us, Shepard, you make me feel.
I'm not looking for a pet, Kate. I've gone elsewhere for that.
I'm glad you did. Just be cheap, cheap. This is a good code. If I just have served with me, I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah. if you had video, it would show them embracing,
and then it would cut to a sort of shapely wheel that seems female because they never did the coding for the same sex, you know, love scene. But you know, maybe Caden just has a really nice behind. You know, you can think of it that way. If I don't know, my little netbook is trying very hard.
Okay.
So, if same-sex romances are kind of out of the picture, if they're something that you can't quite get to without extensive modification, well, how about aliens? That's a classic move from science fiction. You know, it's a great way in which you can explore these sorts of alternative sexualities without necessarily stepping on real toes that people have, or, you know, kind of pushing these things. And, you know, I think that's what I'm going to talk about. One of the questions is, right, if you are creating this space for action, right, this space for romance, and, you know, you're trying to leave a lot of choice up to the player, well, who can they romance? Who can they get with? Not the ugly ones. Look at the little bolus there. He's in his pressurized suit, you know, little squat guy. He's not getting any attention from Commander Shepard. I'm not sure that Commander Shepard would technically survive getting some attention from Krogan there. But you know, people do write fan fictions about these sorts of things and draw some pictures that definitely fulfill Rule 34. Generally, these sort of ugly-looking aliens are a great way to explore, you know, they can write in these sorts of weird social organizations and things, because Shepard isn't actually getting personally involved with them. Except, one of the nice things about BioWare's sort of working and constantly fine-tuning and trying to make these things better is that they pay a lot of attention to their audience. They kind of track these things. We know that they're taking the achievement data that people put up from playing Mass Effect 2, and they're data mining it. They're trying to figure out what people did, what people really liked, what conversations people skipped. They're trying to improve the game for Mass Effect 3. And they also did this in a way between Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2. So there are all these two characters were squad members in Mass Effect 1. You were able to recruit them, and they would be a part of your crew, and you'd have, you know, conversations and kind of get to know them as friends. But a lot of people on the internet said, I want to be more than friends with them. I want to have a romance with this guy. And BioWare said, sure, why not? This is Garrus Vakarian. He's a Turian. They're sort of one of the big other races. They sort of have some different ways of viewing fraternization. They have this strong discipline structure, but in fact, they, you know, in terms of personal freedoms, they're allowed to blow off steam before a big mission by, like, fighting with each other or having sex or whatever. So presumably, there are no workplace shootings among Turians. And this is Holly, who's presumably female, although she wears a mask and a suit, and so you're not really sure what's underneath there, but that's up to your imagination. So, you know, it's not determined for you. And you know, This is a quote from one of the developers. She wore a mask. She was an alien. She had chicken feet. But people still really liked her, and they said, "Oh, I want to find some way to romance Tali." Not to mention the fact they wear those suits is because they have extremely weak immune systems. So in fact, by having skin-to-skin contact with them, you may be compromising their immune systems, and they could get sick or die. And that's a dilemma that, you know, it's has some parallels in real life, with, you know, the relationships where one person has HIV and the other person doesn't. So I think it was really interesting the way they took these existing dynamics and existing characters and tried to figure out, well, how can we write this in a way that is sort of believable to the characters and emotionally satisfying when we didn't actually intend on doing that in the first game? And so that leads to some rather interesting directions in the game.
Okay.
One of the races was designed to be sexy, and not in a product development way, more in a, wow, would you have sex with this alien? Now, this is you know, a fairly basic move among designing aliens. You just take a pretty woman, and you make her skin a different color. Boom. Instant alien. But what's interesting is it's sort of this idea is that they're this all-female race, and they can reproduce asexually, but they need to, in order for genetic diversity, they need to do this kind of neurochemical linking with other species to sort of randomize things, and they sort of act as this father by introducing randomness to the chromosomes. And they live for 1,000 years. So basically, they can have sex with every other species in the galaxy, more or less, and they're universally attractive to every other species in the galaxy. The Asari actually do have sex with the ugly aliens, and I think it's really good for them. I'm happy for that. And because they have this 1,000-year lifespan, they frequently outlive their partners, so they have a more kind of open view of things in terms of coupling, and one of the characters you can form a romance with in the first game. In the second game, if you're forming, you know, going off and getting with someone else, she's like, you know, it's okay, sort of enjoy your time with this person, and then I'll be here. So it's very different. Most of the time, the game structure enforces this kind of monogamy where you have to choose one or the other. But the Asari, they're more open than that. There's one character in the second game who's basically like an Asari, like succubus or sex vampire, and I thought it's really great. You can decide to try and have sex with her, you know, and thinking, oh, you know, I'm Commander Shepard, I'm different, I'm special, you know, I've survived so many death-defying sequences, and no, you die. Critical mission failure. All because, you know, you're thinking with your sexual organs, and you know, I thought it was a great sort of rebuke to the standard wish fulfillment and power fantasies of most games. So I thought that was cool. So for the second game, they wanted to make an alien that women would find attractive. And I think it was really interesting that they sort of designed it with that in mind. And so they would come up with all these drawings, they were trying to find the right mixture, and they would show it to the women in the office and say, would you have sex with this alien? And most of them were like, no, that guy looks like a fish, what's up with that guy? But they sort of eventually settled on this guy, on the right. I don't know. Who thinks that looks like a sexy alien? Yeah, more or less, kind of. Well, what's that?
We have a bat.
That's very true, because, you know, voice acting and story goes a long way. And he's got this... Okay. I think that guy might be sexier than David Hasselhoff. That's just my perspective on it. But, so he's got this, you know... That's true. I'm not German, so it's impossible for me to really look at David Hasselhoff like they do. But so, you know, he has this whole vibe of, like, he's an assassin, but he has this condition that's kind of like tuberculosis, and so he's terminally ill, he's, you know, gonna be dead within a year, he has all, you know, this sort of baggage, and he's got a dead wife and a son. And I don't know. The whole thing is, like, he's this assassin, but he has this, like, sort of like mysticism thing that's kind of like Buddhism or like Hinduism as you see it in the Bhagavad Gita, where he has this whole separation between what his body does and his soul and these like eidetic memories, and it's just, it's really well written and it's kind of interesting. And I don't know, people went for it. They looked at the achievement data and people went for it. So, drawing from this, looking at this in the game, what are the views of interspecies sex in the 2180s? Well, it's unusual. When you bring it up with some of these aliens, they're like, well, I hadn't really thought of it like that. But, you know, it's an accepted alternative practice. Plenty of people in the Mass Effect universe fantasize about the Asari. They're sort of a gateway drug into other more, you know, weirder alien fetishes that people have. You can go and, there are magazines that they have that, sort of weird sexuality is alive and well in the 2180s, but it seems a lot more accepted by people. They're not like, there's no more sort of shunning, there's just sort of a, I've never tried that before, but, sure, maybe. And, you know, there are risks, there are issues of health, issues of negotiating between your culture and your biology and your longevity. And one of the things that really sort of brings it together for them is the sort of specter of death. The idea that, like, you know, we may not make it out of this mission, so, you know, let's have tonight. And I think that's interesting because it's this monogamous structure, but it's not a long-term monogamous structure because, you know, you're a soldier. You could get killed any day. These people sort of drift in and out of your life. And so it creates these relationships that are unusual, but meaningful in some way. Okay, video time. I think I can show some of the clips that I've kind of cherry picked.
So hopefully we'll actually be able to see this.
So, you know, basically they have a certain structure. You kind of develop a rapport with some of them, and they have these, like, loyalty missions where you help them resolve some deep issue from their past so that they can be more devoted to the mission. And then some of them you can go even further with. So this is sort of the payoff sequence from the relationship with Thane, the lizard guy.
Stop. Don't give me a speech.
I'm ashamed.
Through the audio, that was a slash film, but these are from the game.
So I've been told I have to re-ask my question, and I guess you have to re-answer it.
Oh, no.
So my question was, the videos you're showing us are standard scenes that can happen
These come preloaded in the game. These are not, you know, stitched together.
Right.
Awesome.
The most sort of self-conscious and awkward of the relationships, which is cool.
Yeah. I've been thinking about what we talked about. Oh, I've seen easy tension. I've been considering cross-species intercourse. Dancing that way doesn't have nothing judgy. Are we crazy to even be thinking about this? I can do that. I'll find some music and do some research to figure out how this thing should work. Do you have an unknown treasure or horrible interspecies awkwardness thing? In which case, finding the ledgers would be a welcome distraction, so, in any way.
You know, guys, if you're not comfortable with this, it's okay. I'm not trying to pressure you.
The only thing I've got left in this screwed up galaxy. Which I'm not gonna fetish for humans. But this isn't about that. This is about us. You don't have to worry about making me uncomfortable. Nervous, yes. But not uncomfortable.
So when should I book the room?
I'd wait if you're okay with it. Disrupt the crew as long as possible. Take that last chance to find some calm just before the storm. You know me, I always like to take a last shot before popping the heat sink. Wait. That metaphor just went somewhere before.
I like to get back to work.
Right. Because I'm in a great place to optimize firing algorithms right now.
I thought that was excellent. And then
one of the more fun things is that as you're pursuing these things and you go talk to the ship's doctor, they'll sort of bring up that, oh, you know, maybe I can give some medical advice on this. And here we go.
Have you got a minute to talk? Actually, wanted to talk. Medical matters. Aware that mission is dangerous. Different species react differently to stress. Sexual activity normal stress release for humans and Venturians. Still, recommend caution. Warn of chafing.
I intend to be cautious, Doctor. Dangerous is important to me. Not gonna scare me off.
Of course, hormones, regardless, come see me later. May need analgesic chafing. You have a recommendation as a doctor? Tullium's based on dextroamino acids. Human ingestion of tissue could provoke allergic reactions. Anaphylactic shock possible, so don't ingest. Also forwarding advice over to your quarters. Valuable diagrams, positions comfortable for both species, erogenous zone overviews. Can supply oils or ointments to reduce discomfort. Gate ED electronic relationship aid demonstration blades to use as necessary.
Wait a minute, Morton, you're just yanking me around, aren't you?
Shocking suggestion. Doctor-patient confidentiality is sacred trust. We'll never dream. Not mockery. Enjoy yourself while possible, Shepard. We'll be here studying cell reproduction. Much simpler. Less alcohol and mood music required.
So the other funny thing is, like, if you keep talking to the doctor and you're not actively engaged in a romance with any of the other aliens, he'll sort of say to you, Shepard, I like humans, but I'm just not that interested in you if you're asking. And he talks about how, like, for some reason his head fringe is weirdly attractive to Turians, and there are certain Krogans who find Salarian flexibility attractive, and that he's not really that into it, and you can just sort of say, okay. Thanks for letting me down easy. What can we take out of this? Firstly, it's that, yes, if you're going to make a kind of big budget game, there are certain commercial imperatives. But there are ways in which you can kind of get around that. One of them is this sort of way of commentary by abstraction, in which you can be talking about these sort of weird fetishes and kinks, but it's okay because it's with aliens. It's not talking about real kinks, you know? People wouldn't accept it if Commander Shepard had some deviant sexuality, but if you have some futuristic science fictional deviance, it's okay, because it doesn't threaten anyone. And also, like, the other cool thing is that sort of the more you dig into it, there are, like, messages people send you or certain, like, text files or, like, conversations with the doctor where things sort of weirdness starts to emerge. That's sort of not, doesn't really count, I guess, as part of these commercial imperatives, because, you know, your average dude who plays shooter games isn't necessarily going to stumble across these, because it requires you to sort of really dig your way into the game. And finally, you know, if you are loud enough on the internet and it won't scare off buyers, there's a pretty good chance that your particular desires may make it into the next game. So score one for, the internet enabling strangeness. That's about it. Yay! Okay.
I guess there are a couple of questions from the audience. I hope there are. If not, I have to.
Okay.
No, but yeah.
Of course, so it's unanimous. So one thought that I had just read at the end is that you're talking about how if it's with aliens and it's in the future, then it's okay. I haven't played Mass Effect, but now I want to. But I was thinking of Captain Jack Harkness and how it's a sort of accepted that he makes these, you know, kind of lewd comments about how he's, you know, done this and that over the centuries, and, you know, oh, that time with the three, you know, rivers on planet blah-de-blah. And he alludes constantly to sex with aliens, sex with multiple numbers of people, stuff that really you wouldn't expect for a prime time TV show. And but it's okay because it's in the future and it's with aliens.
Yeah, it's in the future. It's not like, it's not shown. It's sort of alluded or pointed towards. And, you know, as we know, there's a difference between pointing to something and shoving it in your face. Yeah. I think that's a good one.
Alyssa?
No.
Who plays Mass Effect? Are the people here, or
like here? Like, okay, let's just smell like the local demographics now.
Yeah.
Who played?
Who plays? Who now kind of wants to? Yay! I don't know. I think it's I tried to make it, you know, approachable to
okay. Maybe a question to the audience. What other popular games do you know that in an interesting way address, let's say, the problem of sexuality? Because I really find it interesting that it's therefore it's specific, like the target group. I mean, this homosexuality thing, that's not that important.
The funny thing with Dragon Age is, one, it's fantasy, so that, you know, it's a bit less direct than these kind of, you know, in Mass Effect it's the future, but it's the future that came from the past. You know, you'll hear advertisements for productions of Hamlet and that sort of thing, and it's directly threatening if you have, you know, if you just have, say, in the future there are gays in the military and no one has any problems with that. Whereas in Dragon Age, it's, you know, it's in this sort of fantasy world, and also it's with an elf. And elves are kind of gay anyway. So some people are just like, it doesn't really count.
Lesbian vampires are so gay. Yes. Okay. Okay. But again, any comments on sexuality in gaming out there? Is anyone any statement on that? Do we have people here who, like, literally, like, every year invest a couple of bucks in buying computer games? Let's narrow it down.
Bad guy. I try to stay a couple of years behind the tech curve.
I see you as a dealing with it, yeah.
Yeah. Then I can find out, you know. Normally it works pretty well.
Okay, but I have to, because I know that this guy, Eric Glassman, will give a talk tomorrow in Northbridge. He is a gaming journalist, which exists, yeah? Because it's a multi-billion dollar market, I know. What's your take on erotic and sexuality in games? I think the most interesting topic is, like, gay characters in games in general, because it's there was a big article in Edge magazine, I think, like 2 months ago or something, where it, like, tracked down, like, every aspect of it, and there were some famous examples, like, for example, the game Bully, where you're this kid in school and you can make out with guys, and then you get an achievement, and then there was all this talk about, like, the pro game. As you mentioned, this is a very good explanation for it. Like, the people were outraged in the forums because you get an achievement. So, and anybody who doesn't know what an achievement is, it's like when you play Xbox or PS3 games, you do a certain thing and then you get just points.
Yeah,
you can brag with them and win lots of points and you're
cool.
It's a great way to, like, get people to do sort of repetitive behaviors and certain things over and over, or really, like, do more things with the game, because there's an achievement for it.
Yeah, and that was the main problem, because it's actually, yeah,
it's okay, but it should not be a repetitive behavior. Or something that you achieve. You know, people are outraged that people could achieve.
Yeah, and it's the same. It's the same problem.
Achieving anus is I like it.
And this is exactly the same.
Can someone tweet that, please?
What?
Achieving anus. I want one.
Another good T-shirt slogan.
Achieve anus. Anus, not anus, but it's okay. It's both the same.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just want to say it's exactly the same problem here, having to deal with all these mainstream strange people who are offended by this.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that, you know, even these sort of slash vids and stuff, people will be like freaked out because it's like Shepard's gay, what? And you know, it helps that they're using like the default male appearance for Shepard, because that's, you know, that's what the bro will choose when he's just like, I don't care what I look like, I want to shoot things. So he'll just use the default male appearance, and that's interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Any other statements? If not, I would say
in the back.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's worth noting that the two companies that seem to be able to get away with this kind of behavior in games is Rockstar and BioWare, two that are some of the biggest grossing. So I think a big part of the problem isn't just the public acceptance and problems like Fox News, but literally there's an even more immediate barrier of getting past the first party
The buyers.
Well, not just the buyers, but actually literally Xbox and PlayStation.
Uh-huh.
The first party, the owners of, you know, the consoles, that they literally can put up gates and say, look, you know, this content is too racy. If you're trying to get your game into certain territories that are appealing, I worked on a game that had content about World War II. Trying to publish it in Germany, you wouldn't believe the kind of things that you have to whitewash out of your game to get into that market. So I think there's a lot of disincentive to have this kind of content. You know, it took people getting up to the point of where BioWare is and where Rockstar is for us to actually be able to start slipping these things into games. And if you look at the PC instead of the consoles, you see that, like, you know, Dragon Age is a lot more racy on the PC. You're going to find a lot more fringe stuff on the PC because they don't have to go through the major publishers to get their stuff online. And the racist content are going to be the stuff, people that can produce their stuff directly to the consumers inside of the website. But just a point to make, do you think that there's any other companies that actually could get away with something on this level?
I mean, I know in the Fable games, you can commit bigamy. You can have several different spouses in different towns of varying genders, and you know, eventually they will sort of, you know, catch up with you and you know, sort of ask you why you're doing that. But I mean, that's really the only one that I can think of, besides the fact that in The Sims, you know, you can have these same-sex couples, and I think that they can end up with children in this sort of, you know, classic familiar structure, except, you know, same-sex.
Okay, so imagine yourself, like, princess, and when you spend your character, and that's in terms of what gender that character is going to be, he likes to pick a female character because if he's going to be staring at a character on a screen all the time, he'd rather be one that's attractive to him. Okay, so he's a female character. So the situation there is, you know, when he's playing a romantic, you know, that has a potentially romantic situation, psychologically, should he be, you know, would you think he'd be interested in a gender for the partner that matches him personally, or a character? It's kind of a...
That is an issue, and like there is this kind of question of people who play the opposite sex character, you know, what are their motivations for it? Is it eye candy? Is it the idea of playing out a role? Is it certain things? Like, and I think in the first Mass Effect, you know, there were there was a male party member who could be romanced by the female shepherd, and a female party member who could be romanced by the male shepherd, and then there was the Asari character who could be romanced by either. And while BioWare technically says, oh, they're not, that was not a lesbian relationship, they were aliens. That's their official line now. Despite the fact that the Asari are basically completely gendered out as females. Like, they look like it, their societal structure is you know, composed into matriarchies. Like, they're absolutely, like, you can't get more female than they are, but they're aliens, so it doesn't count. Yeah, and that was a question of whether it was, you know, whether that option was open for, like, the kind of lesbian titillation for the straight guy gamer, or, you know, or was it actually sort of, you know, giving that option open? And I think maybe the reason that they sort of did this backpedaling in advance of Mass Effect 2 was that they, you know, may have put it in there because they thought it was, you know, it was a sort of safe option. But then when, you know, they did Dragon Age, and that had male homosexual romances, and that, you know, it created this sort of freight train of expectations that they were going to include it in Mass Effect 2. And then they had to retcon the Asari as, well, they're asexual or dual sexual or something, but they're not women. So that way you can't accuse us of a double standard. It's a strange sort of relationship between what I'm sure were the arguments that went on while they were developing the games and the public front they have to present to, you know, maintain propriety.
So pretty much like what the press release will be, to a certain extent. So, yeah, okay. Yeah. But you have to move between the lines of press releases, so that's always a good thing. I would say a big applause to Adam Flynn.